court's back in session. Calling case 84081, Floyd versus State. Counsel, will you state your appearances, please? All right, good afternoon. All right, good afternoon, Mr. Connor. Are parties ready to proceed? All right, please. And Ms. Murphy, would you like to reserve any time? 3 minutes. Certainly.
May it please the court. Today, we are asking this court to reverse the district court's order and hold that NRS 176.355 constitutes an unlawful delegation of authority from the legislature to the executive in violation of Article 3, Section 1 of Nevada's Constitution. Now, the legislature is vested with the power to make laws, define criminal conduct, and set punishment. And pursuant to that power, the legislature has codified the death penalty as a lawful means of punishment in Nevada. And under NRS 176.355, determined that it shall occur by lethal injection. And rather than determine the drug or combination of drugs to be used to carry out this this execution themselves, the legislature delegated this authority to the Nevada Department of Corrections. And while delegations are lawful, they're not limitless. NDOC is only authorized to exercise fact-finding authority, and the legislature must establish suitable standards to sufficiently guide NDOC in the manner in which it should exercise that authority. NRS 176.355 fails to provide suitable standards because it affords the director discretion to determine the class, type, sequencing, and dosaging of the drugs to be used, but fails to provide any suitable guidance on how NDOC should make these determinations. In support of this argument, there are 3 points I'd like to make today. First, how this court's administrative non-delegation jurisprudence supports this interpretation of the statute. Second, how the minority approach to this issue is persuasive here. And finally, why the Eighth Amendment does not inform this court's decision. Turning to the first point, NRS 176.355 provides two standards. The first, that the judgment must be inflicted by an injection of a lethal drug. And second, that the director shall select the drug or combination of drugs after consulting with the chief medical officer. These standards are not suitable because they do not sufficiently guide the director in the manner in which he should determine which drug shall be used. And because it doesn't guide the director, he is able to exercise more than fact-finding authority. And while this court hasn't squarely addressed this issue, it has addressed similar circumstances that support this interpretation and give us the answer.
Can I just ask a quick question? Do you think that the legislature is in a better position than the medical director to decide what combination of drugs, number one, are available at the time of the execution or how they're to be administered? Or is it that better left up to somebody who has the expertise in that area?
Your Honor, whether or not the CMO has expertise is a factually dubious inquiry in itself, because all CMOs have different medical practices. But here, whether or not the CMO has more expertise is divorced from the non-delegation analysis. In this court's administrative non-delegation case law, it doesn't look at whether or not the legislature has delegated to an agency that has more expertise. It solely looks at whether or not the legislature has provided suitable standards. And that's seen in the case law. Even in Luckman, there in a case that has similar circumstances to the issue here, which involved drugs, the pharmacy board likely may have had more expertise than the legislature, but it was still the province of the legislature to provide suitable standards to guide the pharmacy board because they were exercising legislative power. And there, the pharmacy board, the legislature limited the pharmacy board's exercise of that power by providing guidance. They listed various factors by which the pharmacy board was required to consider before making its decision in scheduling drugs, such as the pharmacy board was required to consider the history of the drug. The pharmacy board was required to consider current scientific medical information that was available about the drugs. And the legislature also listed specific requirements that the pharmacy board was required to keep in mind before it scheduled drugs into appropriate schedules. That is how the legislature ensured that the pharmacy board was only exercising fact-finding authority. And that's further supported in McNeil versus State. In McNeil versus State, we were dealing with conditions of lifetime supervision. And there, this court held that even though there ultimately wasn't a delegation, if there had been, it would have violated the doctrine because the legislature needed to provide standards setting forth how, when, and under what circumstances the Division of Parole could exercise the power that had been delegated.
But none of those situations involve what you have here, where the director obviously has constitutional implications on cruel and unusual punishment to adhere to in deciding what drugs to utilize. That's different from the pharmacy board or lifetime supervision. Second part of that is, how is it not fact-finding? I mean, if we're empowering through the legislation to have the director of prisons investigate what are the drugs that are available and that will best accomplish lethal injection, isn't that a fact-finding process by the director?
Your Honor, so I'll answer your first question and then answer the second question. So the first question, it is true that we, you know, have the Eighth Amendment, and we do presume that agency officials act in good faith and in compliance with the Constitution and carrying out their duties, but that is not the issue here. The issue here is whether or not the legislature has provided suitable standards. And if the legislature hasn't, the separation of powers has been violated, and the Eighth Amendment can't cure that violation. And this court adopted a similar interpretation in Luckman. The court specifically stated that sufficient legislative standards are required in order to assure that the agency will neither act capriciously nor arbitrarily. So that indicates that by this court's own case law, that there must be checks on delegated legislative power outside of other constitutional provisions. And to answer Your Honor's second question, how is this fact-finding? This is fact-finding because the director doesn't have to follow any guidance in determining what drugs will be used. And if suitable standards aren't established, then the director has the authority to determine the manner in which he will make these determinations. And that exceeds fact-finding authority. And even in context outside of criminal law, we have seen that greater detail and more guidance has been provided. Recently, in the Namek versus the Division of Insurance case,
how granular do you think the guidance needs to be for this to be okay? Like, how granular do we have to get names of drugs? The steps under which, you know, where an injection has to be put, like how granular are you suggesting that the guidance would need to be for it to pass muster?
So I can provide examples to the court of what I think could possibly pass muster, but what would actually pass muster would be up to the legislature, right? They would have to go through the democratic process. They would have to have open discussions. They would have to have experts come and testify to determine what would meet constitutional muster. But I think what could meet constitutional muster is, at a minimum, to specify the classes of drugs that the director is required to choose from to guide him in making this decision. And an example is I can provide to the court is from Montana. Montana also includes the classes of drugs within its statute. And the Montana statute, that's Montana Code 46-19-103, their statute reads, the punishment of death must be inflicted by administration of a continuous intravenous injection of a lethal quantity of an ultra-fast-acting barbiturate in combination with a chemical paralytic agent. So it still leaves the director, you know, discretion to determine what drugs it will use, but it provides guidance that it needs to choose from the class of barbiturates and also the class of paralytics in making those decisions.
So are you saying there isn't a sufficiently known definition of lethal drug, which is used in our statute? Like, is there some confusion about what that means that isn't sufficient here?
There is. when the term lethal injection is used by a layperson, a layperson probably likely assumes that any drug can be used. But in the death penalty context, in the litigation that we've seen in the past few decades, when you say lethal injection in the death penalty context, you're speaking about specific classes of drugs and types of drugs. And the legislature needed to provide more guidance so that to at least define lethal injection or provide various standards by which the director could define it. There currently are, the FDA has approved over 20,000 drugs for medical use. And in the way that lethal injection is used in this current statute, the director could choose any of those 20,000 drugs, and there's no guidance in how he should be making those determinations.
Mr. Murphy, most of the courts that have considered this issue have determined that their particular state statutes meet constitutional muster. Why should we make a different decision?
While it is true that out of the 27 states that have the death penalty, nine have found that these delegations are upheld, and two others also found that these delegations were upheld, but they have since found their the death penalty unconstitutional under other means. The reason why this court should not adhere to the majority of jurisdictions and why it's not persuasive here is because those jurisdictions either use a different test or a different standard than the Luckman standard that we use here. And even our sister states. So, for example, the Arizona Supreme Court assesses whether or not the legislature has delegated a basic standard to the delegated agency. That's less stringent than what Nevada has. And in California looks to whether or not the legislature has delegated a fundamental policy issue, as they're not allowed to delegate fundamental policy issues. Nevada doesn't consider that. And the majority of the other states that have also upheld this sort of delegation look to whether or not the legislature has delegated to an agency that has more expertise, or whether or not the legislature has delegated an issue that would be too onerous for the legislature to take up, or whether or not it would require continual updating. And as I said, those are all not factors that this court looks to, and that's why the majority isn't persuasive here, but the minority approach is.
Counsel, but
what policy position is being, or I'm sorry, policy decision is being delegated when the policy decision about the manner of the execution process, the lethal injection, has been determined by the legislature? What policy determination then, substantial policy determination, is left then, is being delegated to the NDOC?
So I think the issue with the statute is that the manner hasn't been determined, the method has been determined. But unlike other methods of execution, the manner isn't inherent in the method with lethal injection. And so the policy issue is what lethal drugs will be used is a policy issue in itself, because it's the manner in which you are carrying out the punishment that's been set. And as I stated, unlike other methods, that's not inherent. Manner is not inherent in the method here.
Does the fact of the ability of the defendant to challenge those pursuant to statute and in court affect what our decision should be here?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't understand.
The defendant is free to challenge the method and manner of execution once that determination is made, correct?
Correct.
Does that have any effect on our determination here?
No, it doesn't, because that challenge would be under the Eighth Amendment. That challenge would be under whether or not it's cruel and unusual. Right now, we are bringing this underneath the separation of powers, and the issue was at the time the statute was enacted. If a defendant wanted to challenge whatever that protocol would be, it would be under whether or not it was cruel and unusual under the Eighth Amendment. And I see that I am out of time, so if there are no more questions.
Justice Ernie, I'm sorry.
I think one of the things the majority of cases all seem to hit upon is the idea of not doing things because you can, but because you should. And they seem to lean towards the legislature should not be doing this, in large part because it's impractical, and you have a Department of Corrections that has more expertise in figuring out this evolving and fluid process that the executions involve. In addition, I think you referenced the Arizona case. That case referenced the fact that we don't want the legislature trying to provide specific guidance when the Department of Corrections has a 35-page execution protocol. I think Nevada's is actually 65 pages. So how could the legislature provide more specific guidance than that?
So while it should still be left to the discretion of the director to determine those fact-finding details of the protocol, whether or not it's still up to the legislature to provide sufficient guidance by limiting that inquiry. The way that the statute is written right now, it still allows too much discretion, and that leans into legislative power. And of the five states currently that do have drugs specified within their statutes, the majority of them haven't had to update those statutes within the last 10 years. So it's a misnomer that this would require continual updating. It will initially, in the beginning, likely require the legislature to come together to amend the statute, but the continual updating is also not a factor that this court considers in determining whether or not to uphold the delegation.
All right, thank you, Ms. Murphy. I'll give you 2 minutes in rebuttal.
Thank you.
Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court, Jeffrey Connor on behalf of the respondents. The non-delegation doctrine is a mechanism that this court uses to enforce one of the most foundational principles of American government, which is, of course, the separation of powers. This court's decisions applying that doctrine are not nearly as narrow as Mr. Floyd argues that they should, that this court should interpret the doctrine and apply it in this case. Reaching as far back as 1923, this court's decision in State X Rel Giannacchio versus Shaughnessy, all the way up to this court's most recent statement on the non-delegation doctrine in the Namek versus Division of Insurance case. When we look at those cases, what we're dealing with in those cases is not really truly just purely fact-finding. I mean, if an agency's, if the legislature's ability to delegate authority to an executive agency was limited purely to fact-finding, then of course the Division of Insurance wouldn't have been able to promulgate a new rule that addressed use of credit scores in the midst of the COVID pandemic on insurance policies and premiums. If the legislature could not delegate them rulemaking authority, then that rule would have had to been struck down, but it wasn't. When we look at the non-delegation doctrine, yes, a lot of it is about fact-finding, and Luckman specifically focuses on fact-finding. I think that's particularly because of the nature of the claim that was at issue in Luckman, which was that in delegating to the pharmacy board the ability to classify drugs, the argument there was that the pharmacy board was actually engaged in defining the elements of an offense. And so the court was specifically focused on the pharmacy board being engaged only in fact-finding in that case under the circumstances of that case, where it was about where did heroin and marijuana fall within the class of drugs such that it was a criminal offense under Nevada law. Luckman is a very specific case, but I don't think this court should look at the non-delegation doctrine as purely limiting executive agencies to only making fact-finding, because otherwise this court would have come out the other way in the Namek case. But that said, I think the court's questions focusing on what the director is engaged in adopting a lethal injection protocol is fact finding. He's looking at what are the qualities and characteristics of these drugs, what's the appropriate dosage. Those are all the same sorts of decisions that the pharmacy board was engaged in classifying drugs in the Luckman case. There's no difference. I have yet to hear any principled distinction between what the director of the Department of Corrections and the department as a whole is doing in creating an execution manual. And I don't see a fundamental difference between what they're complaining about here and what this court has said is okay in cases like Luckman and Namek and Shaughnessy.
Does it matter that in this context, the state is taking a life? Does that alter the standard by which we should review the specificity of the delegation instruction?
Your Honor, I think we've all heard the term death, the saying that death is different. And this certainly is a very serious, you know, this is the height of government action, if you will, in terms of taking another life. But I think what my response to that is that those types of concerns are built into the criminal process, and that's why the Eighth Amendment exists. And that's why the Eighth Amendment actually is important here and builds into the court's analysis here, because the Eighth Amendment, there's no debate here that the Eighth Amendment limits the director's discretion in setting forth a protocol.
And so it informs its exercises.
Yes.
You're saying the Eighth Amendment is of a piece with the delegation.
It absolutely is. And when you look at the many of the other state court decisions that have addressed this issue and rejected the non-delegation challenge, they all recognize the Eighth Amendment's role. I shouldn't say all of them, but many of them do recognize the Eighth Amendment's role in setting forth a method of execution.
So, Mr. Connor, when I looked at the other states and the other cases, it appears to me that Nevada has one of the least specific statutes out there. Do you think that matters? For example, most of the other statutes in other states use the word intravenous. They require the injection to end the life of the person. We don't have any of that language at all.
I don't think that lack of specificity matters here. I think what Your Honor is referring to is a lot of the statutes say injection of a drug in a lethal quantity or something of that nature. But I mean, that I think is inherent in injection of a lethal drug.
Is it?
Wouldn't
that give the director of the Department of Corrections, in addition to using, I mean, because really any drug, if used in high enough dose, is lethal, right? To use any drug, but to also, I guess you could just use a regular injection versus intravenous injection. I mean, it's more latitude that's provided in most of the states.
So certainly, you know, I mean, there are different kinds of drugs that might come into play that could be injected by different means. Well, certainly there are intravenous injections, there's intramuscular injections, subcutaneous injections. That's going to depend upon the kind of drug that's being used. And typically when you look at these drugs, they come, you know, the FDA puts out these pamphlets that talk about the drugs, and that information is usually going to include something that explains what's the appropriate means for implementing or injecting that drug. And so that is then going to come back to the director's decision about what drug to use. But again, in that process, the director is only engaged in a fact-finding analysis of looking at what are the qualities of this drug and are they sufficient to carry out the punishment. And that's the important point here, that the legislature's role here in the criminal sphere is defining elements of offenses and defining punishments. And the punishment is death. So if I don't see how there would be a need for the statute to go so far as to say that it has to be injected in a lethal quantity, if the whole point of carrying out the execution is, as Justice Pickering pointed out, to take that person's life. The statute is very clear on that. That is the goal here, is that this person, as a result of the injection of these drugs, will die. And the director's discretion in carrying out that activity is it's governed by the Eighth Amendment. The Eighth Amendment informs the director's exercise of his discretion in setting forth a protocol. And if the prisoner thinks the non-delegation doctrine is about ensuring that executive agents aren't exercising their discretion in an arbitrary or capricious manner, the Eighth Amendment is not going to allow something like that to happen in a prisoner. If he thinks that there's something wrong with the protocol, can bring a challenge to that And as the U.S. Supreme Court has made repeatedly clear over the last decade or so, in order to successfully challenge a protocol, they have to propose a known available alternative that would reduce or substantially reduce a risk of unnecessary pain. And so really, when we look at what Floyd's challenges are here, and especially if we go back to the briefing that was filed in the preliminary injunction appeal, the concern here is, and I understand this, I don't think it's an invalid or unwarranted concern, is making sure that the execution is carried out in a humane manner. The state wants that to happen too. If there's going to be an execution, that it be carried out humanely. And so that's, you know, as far as the non-delegation doctrine goes here, I think the vast majority of the courts that have looked at this issue have it right, that the legislature's role is defining the crimes and the punishment, and it leaves the details of how to carry out an execution to the director of the Department of Corrections. If there aren't any further questions, I'll submit.
Colleagues? All right, thank you, Mr. Connor.
Thank you.
The concern here is whether or not the legislature has provided sufficient guidance to an agency which it has delegated its legislative powers to. And it was mentioned that Luckman was more detailed because it dealt with defining criminal conduct. And that, I guess, assumes that less detail is required when setting punishment. But that is not true. In NRS 209.341, the legislature set forth that for some crimes, the punishment shall be prison. And it simply didn't state that for if you are convicted of certain crimes, you will go to prison. It set forth within that statute that the director has to establish a classification system, an evaluation system for how offenders will go to prison, how they will be classified. It has to assess risk and needs because it's more than just setting forth what the punishment will be. It's the manner and under what circumstances the legislature shall carry out that punishment. And I think the distinction between Luckman and the Namik case in here is that even in the Namik case that didn't deal with criminal conduct, there was still more guidance provided. The legislature specifically stated that the division had to create regulations in order to ensure that the policies weren't unfairly discriminatory. It provided definitions for how to various standards for how the division could define unfair actuarial discrimination. And it also set forth specific circumstances where insurers could not use consumer credit, which indicated to the division that that is where it needed to limit the conduct.
Ms. Martin, let me ask you a question. Would we be having this conversation if Section 1 of the statute just listed firing squad as opposed to lethal injection?
Your Honor, I will admit that it would be a much closer question because firing squad, unlike lethal injection, the manner is more inherent within that method.
But under your proposal, I mean, you would essentially say the legislature needs to tell the Department of Corrections what type of weapon can be used, what caliber of weapon, what type of bullets can be used, where in the prison they can effectuate that firing squad. I mean, it kind of goes to the chief's point about how granular can you go with the legislature.
Well, I think the distinction and the difference between firing squad, where when you say firing squad, it is kind of inherent that you will use a gun and bullets. With lethal injection, it's akin to a medical procedure. So there isn't even a starting point for where the director would begin. It requires substantial assessment and analysis to determine the classes, the type, what combination is going to be used, what sequencing, which dosaging. It's coming up with
all the more reason why the legislature shouldn't be making that medical call. Like that's like, I mean, we don't tell doctors, I hope, exactly, you know, well, yes, first you must have the person sit on the table, then you must have the person lay down.
Well, we do require the legislature, when they delegate their authority, to provide more guidance in how that delegated agency, the manner in which it should exercise the authority. And what's been provided in the statute here doesn't provide enough guidance in how the department, in the manner in which the department should exercise the authority that's been delegated. And,
I'm sorry. Did I answer your question? Yeah. Ms. Murphy, you agree that the drugs that are used in lethal injection protocols, it's a dynamic area, right? Some people are backing away from a paralytic. Some people are doing a one drug. Some people are not necessarily doing barbiturates or doing something else. So it's a dynamic area, you'll agree, or would you agree, in terms of what drugs would be used for a lethal injection?
I would say dynamic in the sense of how many drugs to use. But I think what's been consistent is that it's going to consist of a paralytic, a sedative, and a killing agent. Now, whether or not you choose to use all three or you choose to just use a long-acting barbiturate, but those, it's going to be from those three classes, at least those three classes of drugs, and what will change is whether or not you choose to use one, two, or three.
Okay. All right.
If there are no more questions, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Thank you, Mr. Connor. This matter will stand submitted, and the court will be in recess.